World War One on the BBC.
The 4th of August. The French have woken up to find that they are now at war. But in Britain, some still hope to avoid it.
Britons, do your duty. Keep your country out of a wicked and stupid war.
A full-page advertisement for the Neutrality League appears on the front pages of the left-leaning press. And anti-war meetings are held across the country. In Manchester, a leading local politician, Sir Alexander Porter, addresses the crowd.
We are being forced into a war at the beck of the autocrat and the armament makers. A war for no object that is worth the life of a single Englishman.
At 11 a.m., the cabinet meets in London. The heated debates of the weekend are over. They agree to send Germany an ultimatum to respect Belgium's neutrality. The deadline is midnight in Berlin, 11 p.m. in London. At the Foreign Office, telegrams are readied to inform British embassies around the world that the country is at war. The forms have been kept in the files for years, with only the name of the enemy left out. Clerks spend the day writing in Germany.
We strongly condemn the action of the military in firing on an unarmed citizen.
In Dublin, the inquest into the Bachelor's Walk shootings reaches a verdict. The British Army did wrongly kill three unarmed Irish demonstrators. But few pay attention. The Irish question is off the table. Unionists and nationalists both are rushing to support the war. In Berlin, shortly after 7 p.m., the British ambassador, Sir Edward Goschen, goes to see the German Chancellor with the ultimatum. But it's too late. German troops are already invading Belgium. Goschen reports.
His Excellency at once began a harangue which lasted for about 20 minutes. He said that the step taken by His Majesty's government was terrible to a degree. Just for a word, neutrality, a word which in wartime had so often been disregarded, just for a scrap of paper. I protested strongly it was a matter of honour for Great Britain that she should keep her solemn engagement to defend Belgium's neutrality. The Chancellor said, "But at what price will that compact have been kept? Has the British government thought of that?"
As the hour of the deadline approaches, an anxious crowd waits at Downing Street. Margot Asquith, the wife of the Prime Minister, is beside her husband.
I looked at the children asleep after dinner, before joining Henry in the cabinet room. Lord Crewe and Sir Edward Grey were already there, and we sat smoking cigarettes in silence. Some went out, others came in, nothing was said. The clock on the mantelpiece hammered out the hour, and when the last beat struck, it was as silent as dawn. We were at war.
Reactions across the country range from jubilance to despair. In London, the pro-war crowds stay up late. The Times is there.
At 1:30, Whitehall was as crowded as ever. The full moon and the strong electric light and the unceasing roaring and singing and the furious movements on the outskirts of the crowd made an extraordinary scene. The Angel of Death was abroad, and the world could hear the beating of his wings.
Thank you for downloading this program from the BBC. For more information, go to bbc.co.uk/ww1.